the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast. I'm Melissa Griffin, Executive Director here at the Arts Center. In this podcast, we discuss how art and life blend. Today's guest is Cindy Blair, a sculpture artist out of Alexandria, Louisiana. She creates illuminated sculptures inspired by organic forms and focused on color and movement. Cindy is one of 14 artists whose work is featured in the Marjorie Morrison Sculpture Biennial exhibit here in the main gallery of the Hammond Regional Arts Center. That exhibit is on display from January 21st through February 17th. Cindy, hi. Thanks for being here today.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's so exciting to talk to you and to also have your work in the gallery at the same time.
It's exciting to be here. Yeah, it's a beautiful show.
So you have a bachelor's degree from LSU, a master's degree from State University of New York at Albany. You have an advanced certificate from Pratt Institute, and you're currently working at the Alexandria Museum of Art. You sound very busy. You started as a painter, though, not a sculptor. Is that correct?
Right, that's right.
What kind of paintings were you doing?
I was doing, I was doing a lot of self-portraits, that started off as just sort of a way to deal with some sort of body image issues that I had, as I was pregnant and had my son, it became about how my body was changing, and then about sort of like the postpartum issues I was having, so the work got it got wild, but that's the kind nice. Of work I was doing initially.
And so what inspired you to make the switch to sculpture art?
I always kind of had toyed with it. And I think what it is that, you know, when I was growing up and starting to paint, like in high school, what happened was I had some urges to sculpt. I would sculpt weird little things in my room, but I didn't have any guidance because the art class we had at school was all painting and drawing. There really wasn't a lot of sculptural stuff happening. So I didn't have any guidance. I got into college. I took some really wonderful ceramic classes at LSU. I did look at doing a sculpture minor, but, you know, then there were some issues with certain classes that I was taking. It just didn't take.
Mm-hmm.
And then graduate school, I ended up doing a little bit of clay sculpture again. And that was a whole big dramatic thing because they get very upset if you if you try to like do something different in the middle. People get possessive of their students, I think. But so it really wasn't until Pratt that it really clicked for me. My first semester at Pratt was in South Africa, which was amazing. Yeah, they invited me to be one of like, I think there were like maybe 8 of us that went on this program. And Pratt, their art education program is very big on producing teaching artists instead of art teachers. They really want you to see yourself as an artist first.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were in South Africa, not only were we teaching, but we had to choose an art elective. And there were two you could choose. You could choose printmaking or you could choose puppetry. And I had to do puppetry, you know,
right.
and that was being taught by Theodora Skipetares, who's an experimental theater creator in New York, and she's amazing. And she had us create these puppets, and I made this Kurt Vonnegut puppet. Like, I think the intention was we were supposed to cast them out of paper mache, but she liked my sculpt so much. She said, we need to do this in plaster so we can catch all those details.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think that was when it just clicked. That's when I started really loving sculpture and really realizing that I was a 3D person, that, you know, I remember like trying to do things with drawing and trying to make it happen. And I would always get a little sleepy. And then there was just something about sculpture that I don't get sleepy when I sculpt, you know?
Wow. So yeah, that's an incredible story.
Yeah.
So what kind of things were you sculpting there at the beginning? Was it all puppetry or based, or did you navigate towards something else before you got to your current work?
Initially, it was puppets. And then I did a lot of shadow puppet pieces or doing small things in paper clay, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it was I didn't have a studio at that point. I was my art was more part time then. And so I really was doing these small little puppet pieces, small little flat shadow puppet type things initially. So what is your work is very, very unique. I don't think I've seen anything like it before since I first saw it. And it's, what's the best way to describe it, especially since we're audio here? So people are going to have to go looking for the work. But what's the best way to describe what you do?
Well, I think it's definitely abstract. And I think the thing about that I didn't understand about abstract art before I started doing is that abstract artists, I think we tend to sort of get excited about a certain element of art, you know, mm-hmm. and I think mine are really, that's very hard to describe them actually. but yeah, mine are really, really, really heavily influenced by movement. So I always try to make sure there's some kind of movement, some sort of wavy. So they're kind of roughly and wavy, and there's sometimes I'll use textures like line, a sort of a line texture or something to sort of weave through the piece to really emphasize that. Mm-hmm. They glow, you know?
Right.
I hope they're kind of ethereal. I hope so.
and sometimes they literally do move. The last time you were here in 2020 exhibiting for the Marjorie Morrison Sculpture Biennial, you had a piece that had sort of springs on it.
Yeah.
And it literally like,
bounced a little.
Yeah, it kind of had a bounce. It wiggled.
And also the pieces are, they often interact with an actual designed piece. Some of the pieces I'm working on now are actually, I will interact with sort of a lamp base or some sort of vintage form that has a design that I feel inspired by. And so the piece I sculpt for it is really just, I feel like almost a continuation of that form.
Nice.
So this, and not all of them do. I've got one piece that is just, it's just its own sculpture.
So you're working with paper and you're working with light.
I used to work, with paper.
And now, so now you're working with.
It's a translucent polymer clay.
Polymer clay.
So I used to work with rice paper. I think the last time I was here, I was working with sort of a rice paper mache over a, and I would do it over a form and then pop that off and, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like mold making with and then the rice paper is translucent, so the light would shine through that. But now I'm working with a translucent polymer clay, sort of a craft type medium, but there's so much you can do with it. The particular kind I'm using is one that a lot of crafters don't like to use because it's very fluid and they don't like that you can't control it mm-hmm. as well. It's not as stiff. But I really love that. And sometimes it's annoying. Linda Binglish, you know, she would do that thing where she has like, not that I'm comparing myself to her, but I was inspired by her because she does that thing where she allows a material to kind of just do what it does, you know, mm-hmm. and let that inform. So there's some of that going on in my work too, where I create a form. And as I start to drape the clay around it, I just sort of allow it to
Be what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And, to take its own shape.
Within reason.
Yeah, right. That's very interesting. So can you take me step by step through this process?
Sure.
Like, how are you conceptualizing? What's the process of coming up with, okay, this is what I'm going for this time? Or is it just, I'm going to get in there and play and see what happens? And then where do you go from there?
Yes to all of those things. Okay, so what I do is sometimes I'll start with a base, you know, like some sort of lamp form. And that will then inform the rest of the piece. Like there's a progression through my process over the past couple of years where one thing sort of informs another and I'm sort of building on this thing. And then we like, I sort of follow my curiosity that, and so like one sculpture will give me a question that I try to answer in the next one. And it's sort of like, and so I don't really try to think of ideas anymore.
Can you give me an example of a question?
Oh, okay. So like most recently, my question is what's going to happen if I start to create like layers, like almost like an onion where I've got these sort of very gradual layers in the colors, maybe how color will change if one color shines through it, if I'm layering color, I'm layering. So what's going to happen if I do that? So that's exciting.
That is.
If there's a form, then I allow that to sort of inform. If there's a lamp form, I'll let that influence the work. Otherwise, like, I'm just sort of on this sort of path. And I will start with I start with a foil form that I create. And I'll shape it and try to get it as smooth as I can so that when the clay lays on top of it, there's not drama. Mm-hmm. And so I'll create that form. I will then go to the clay, and I'm already kind of working in layers. So a lot of times I'll do the white layer first, just so that I don't feel crazy about having to clean everything and not getting color on my white, all that drama. But then I will lay out another piece of clay, and I'll roll it out flat. And I might add at this point like a texture, like I press a texture into it, or I might leave it flat. And then I get a soft pastels, mm-hmm. and I grind them up and I brush them on the clay.
Interesting.
And I can kind of sort of mix them on the on this little clay canvas that I've created.
Sure.
And then I take that and I sort of wrap it and add it to the sculpture. And then all of that gets baked at 265 for 30 minutes.
Like a recipe.
Yeah. And I mean, and all this before is like, you know, the boring part that comes ahead of all this is me wiring lamps and stuff. So, yeah.
Well, and that too is interesting because you've taken the time to learn how to wire lamps, you know, but not everyone does, you know, in order to create a piece of art that is unique in that it's not only this layered sculpture with these different techniques that you're using, but also is illuminated with light. And so you've said that luminary processions have inspired your use of light. Talk to me about first, what kind of luminary processions? What is that?
So when I started working at the museum, one of the things that we dealt with as a downtown institution in Alexandria was that we had to figure out a way to engage the community. We have these downtown festivals that happen, and just where the museum is situated, it's kind of very hard for us to have people engage with us during these festivals because we're like one street off mm-hmm. of the, I mean, I don't know if you're downtown, y'all have stuff like that, and you know what I mean, but if you're off, if you're just one street off of the festival thing, then you're a little bit, right. out of luck.
Sure.
So we would open our doors and nobody would come. And it would be like, well, this feels a little bit crazy. How do we become part of this? And I you know, we were all talking. I said, we have to go to them. Mm-hmm. And initially that was like, okay, well, we could do art activities or whatever. But, you know, you do that and you do that and you do that. And it's, I mean, it's fine, but
it becomes redundant.
Yeah, I wanted to make more of an impact. And so I don't remember how it happened, but I discovered Chantel Ritter. Chantel Ritter is an artist from New Orleans who, after Katrina, moved to Atlanta and adopted that as her community. And there's this part of Atlanta called the Beltline, and they were trying to rebuild that. So she started doing these processions as a way to sort of garner interest, and she would do workshops that would raise money for the project. And I think her procession started with maybe 100 people, and now it's like 60,000 people.
Wow.
That come to march along the Beltline with these homemade luminaries that they make in her workshops. And I emailed her, and, you know, she has a website where she really wants everybody doing this. Mm-hmm. So she has this website where she shares all her processes. And so I started building a giant mermaid. And I just like looking at her pictures and everything, it was so inspiring. And she talked about how she was influenced by these luminary processions that happen in other parts of the world. You know, I think a lot of them happen in like Indonesia and China, and mm-hmm. Eastern cultures do it a lot. There's a beautiful one in England that happens in Leeds, I think. But they happen all over the place. So using her instructions, I built this 20-foot long mermaid. And that was our first luminary. I think I built a little alligator too, maybe right before that. So we had like a couple of these. Mm-hmm. And then I would have people come in and use these sort of like, you know, those globes that you can buy, the paper ones. And they would build little luminaries and we'd do little processions. So it started off with just the art walk procession. I do 3 a year.
Wow.
There's a fall one, there's a winter fet one, and there's a river fet one in May. And I try to build a new thing for each procession. That's gotten a little bit challenging. We actually just did our first 2 processions this year since lockdown. That was mm-hmm. kind of heartbreaking.
Certainly.
The first procession I had to cancel was very, very hard. But anyway, yeah, that really inspired my work, and I was making all of these giant luminaries, and I just at some point thought, how can I bring this into the studio? Because this is all I want to do. Like, if you just let me build things that light up, I could do that forever.
Wow.
Like, that could be my thing.
That's really, really interesting. So that material that you were working with was pretty delicate, you know, paper.
Yeah.
But very versatile and mm-hmm. easy to work with. And so obviously using light in your work is a big factor in what you choose to work with. Are you constantly exploring things that are translucent that you can continue to add or to continue to use with your work?
Definitely. Yeah, the rice paper was great, but there were issues with, you know, there were just issues with it. The polymer clay is great too. I mean, but I am always kind of like doing searches for translucent, you know. I'm not finished exploring this, but yeah, there will probably be something else. I've had people encourage me to work in glass, but they, you know, that there's kind of a expense to that I can't cover at this in this moment, and also a bit of a learning curve, but I'm always open to learn, so mm-hmm. you know. And I also kind of wonder what that I'm not closing myself off to it, but I wonder what that would be like, because I do like to touch. I'm very tactile.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do that with glass, but but I don't know, maybe. Like, it could happen. I'm very open, very, very open.
Well, that's awesome. So it's been incredible hearing your story so far. We're going to take a really quick break and come back and talk to you a little bit about demystifying the artistic process. So we'll be right back here on the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast with Cindy Belair. Thanks for listening to the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast. I'm Melissa Griffin, talking today with sculpture artist Cindy Belair. You've said that your goal is to demystify the artistic process by showing or talking about the process it takes to create your work. Why is that important to you?
Well, I can credit some of that to Pratt for insisting that we all be teaching artists. It becomes so much part of your identity that when you're teaching and you see children and adults, I mean, somehow it's harder to hear adults do this, but they say, I can't. And I know that they can. And the reason I know that they can is that I didn't fall out of the womb with skills.
Mm-hmm.
I fell out of the womb with a drive.
Sure.
So I think that that's what you need to be a good artist. I don't think it has anything to do with gifts or talent. I mean, some people might have more of a tendency towards a skill, you know?
Sure.
But I don't. You know, growing up, I think this is true of a lot of people, you identify an artist as someone who can draw or sculpt something that looks like something else. Mm-hmm. And I was very hard on myself, but I had the drive to learn how to do that. It took me years because the right kind of instruction is important. I just think that demystifying that process, it's so empowering for people. And making things is important. Even if you're not an artist, it's good for your brain. It's good for your soul. It teaches all kinds of problem-solving skills, even to adults. It really encourages flexible thinking, which I think is so important.
So I love hearing what you're saying about demystifying that process for either aspiring artists or people who are consider themselves to not be artists, because I'm not an artist and I run a nonprofit arts center, and that's weird for people sometimes. And you know, I have a different perspective than a lot of the people that I work with here, whether it be artists who are exhibiting or people on my board or on our committees and stuff. And so I think I give a perspective of the general public who are coming in looking at the exhibits or taking a class. And so I can help kind of hone in mm-hmm. on those people who maybe need that encouragement and need that instruction like you're talking about. And so let's go to your other job. At the Alexandria Museum of Art, you are an art educator.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? So you've been there for a while. Yeah. So tell us exactly what you do there.
So I am currently, thanks to COVID, I'm currently I also do virtual education as well, or with what we're calling it, virtual engagement. So I have that program and that's basically videos for our social media that are educational and engaging about our, I started doing something called Vault Peaks. So that is me going into the vaults and sharing a piece of work with somebody, with everybody. And I'm really trying to engage with the collection more than I ever have before. And so, yeah, and little tutorials, little art making tips, things like that, just to sort of get people engaged. And a lot of it is geared towards, hey, you can do this too.
Right.
Or you don't have to be intimidated by art. I think that's a big thing with art centers and museums and things is making people understand that this is for everybody. I had that moment myself living in New York City and going to the Met every single time I would go to the Met. And I went a lot. Every time I went to any of those big museums or galleries, I always walked through the door with like serious imposter syndrome. Like, they're going to know. They're going to know. Meanwhile, I mean, how egocentric is that? Because there are like hundreds of people, maybe thousands in the building, but they're going to know I don't belong. Right? So I just want people, like, that's a big part of my job. I do family classes. I have a team program called The Muse where the kids get to create their own programming. I work with, I do expressive therapy for veterans. I do the virtual programming. We just got a big IMLS grant to create a teacher portal on our website that would be part of our member portal, but it would be free for teachers.
Awesome.
So they can come in and they can get, interviews and lesson plans. And actually we're about to do a focus group. So we'll see what they decide. They want from us on that teacher portal. So I'm so excited. But so I do all of that kind of thing. And I do the procession. So it's pretty
exciting. With the goal of inspiring people to engage.
Engage. It's good for you. Like just showing them what art can do for them and showing them that the Alexandria Museum of Art is their community museum and everybody is welcome. And it's like it's their museum. You know,
right. So. Yeah, I think over the years we have reached kind of a similar crossroads where we wanted to make sure that the general public understands that this is for them,
right?
Here at the Hammond Regional Arts Center as well, because it can be intimidating when you're not an artist, even to just come to the exhibits, which. Mm-hmm. When you're on the inside, seems like, oh, come on, hurry up.
You know, yeah,
like,
right.
What are you waiting for?
This is fabulous.
Right.
Have you not seen it?
But for people who aren't exposed to the arts and don't engage in the arts and aren't hearing that welcome on a regular basis are maybe questioning whether they belong or not. And we're here to tell you that you do. You belong.
You do. Absolutely. I'm just trying to make it. Yeah, I think, and I know you probably do this too. We're just trying to make it more accessible, like mm-hmm. making you feel welcome, like, and just understanding when we walk through the door, we all have that sort of imposter syndrome feeling,
right?
You know, it's okay.
Well, and I love to, so here at the Hammond Regional Arts Center, we teach classes on a regular basis, and we often have artists learning from other artists, you know, mm-hmm. So you've got a painter learning to sculpt from a sculptor or the other way around, and they get all jazzed up and excited because they know what that process is like, where you start and you know nothing.
No. Yeah.
And then you learn, and then you get inspired, and you begin to create on your own and stuff. And so we'd love for the general public or whoever is interested to have that experience as well.
Absolutely. I mean, learning is hard.
It is.
Like everybody, you know, you walk into it, just know that our artists have a hard time sometimes learning art too, you know,
mm-hmm.
Everybody struggles.
Yes.
That's part of it.
And I want to give a quick shout out to Shayla Kelly, who teaches our artistry classes here, because
wonderful.
She makes it so easy and fun and comfortable for, she teaches the kids, the teens, and the adults, and she's just a whiz at it. And every time someone takes a class, they go, oh my gosh, I didn't know I could do all that. And she helped me so much.
That's
so
fantastic.
So kudos to art educators
yeah.
like yourself and like Shayla. We appreciate what you guys are doing. So we've been talking about your work in Alexandria. Alexandria is quite a ways away from here. How did you get involved with the Hammond Regional Arts Center?
So a few years ago, the Louisiana Art Educators Association had their dinner here, and y'all were part of their conference. And I'm good friends with Denise.
Denise
Holly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think we're having lunch after this. And anyway, so she really is the one who encouraged me to enter the competition and or enter the exhibition. And yeah, thanks, Denise.
Yes. Another shout out. Denise also is the person who encouraged Shayla while we're talking about that, to get involved and to be our art educator here. So
she's an encourager.
She is. She is very, very good at that. And she's been with us. She and Pat Macaluso have been with us since the inception of, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary this year, and they've been with us since day one. So we love and appreciate all that they do, especially bringing in new talent like yourself and like Shayla and many, many others as well. So I wanted to go back to the beginning and ask you, like, when you were a kid, did you know that art was your calling, or did you want to be a gymnast or an astronaut?
I mean, you know, you go through that. I always enjoyed making things, but yeah, it really clicked for me in high school. I kind of always really enjoyed making things. There were other things I wanted to do with my life. I thought I wanted to be an actor. I wanted it so much that I was going to sneak to New Orleans without my parents told me I couldn't do it, to audition for this college, for this theater college in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you did or didn't?
I did not do that. No, I did not do that. I had a teacher in high school, Ken Newsom, who gets really the credit for my art career in a way, because all of this was going on. I think all my teachers knew that I was in this sort of turmoil about what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, I think they all knew that I was going to try to do crazy things like sneak to New Orleans to do an audition. You know, I'm in Ravel, it's like 4 hours north. Like, that's
right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I couldn't drive. I didn't have a driver's license until I was in my 20s because I was epileptic. So, like, how was I getting there?
Right. That was going to be my question. Were you going to use your thumb or like a bus pass?
Kind of like talked into taking me, and it was a whole thing. But I think everyone knew what was going on. And I think that's why Ken one day sat me down. He was my gifted teacher, and he sat me down and he said, "Hey, look, you have a scholarship to a state school, and here is LSU's catalog. Let's plan your first semester as a visual arts student." And I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah.
So he sat down and he planned my first semester with me. I'm sure my parents were involved in that. I don't know, but Ken was somebody I really looked up to, and he set that path for me, because I was in so much, I was even thinking about not going that year after high school. I was going to take a year off and go volunteer somewhere or something. I was a mess. So thanks, Ken.
So how exciting is that? And how different would your life have been had you snuck off to New Orleans, or just not going to school, you know, like there's so many different outcomes could have happened, but here you are today.
I know. Who knows? I mean, and it could have been wonderful. It could have been a mess. Who knows?
Right.
I mean, you know.
Well, that's really great that he took the time to sit down with you. And that's inspiring and encouraging, because oftentimes here at the Art Center, we are doing what we can to reach teachers who I know are very, very busy. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're trying to reach them and help them to have the resources they need to make impacts like that on students that are coming up who might have a propensity toward art and just need a little push or a little encouragement or, hey, let's plan your semester, whatever it may be. So did you ever, in the process of becoming an artist, like through college and stuff, did you ever doubt yourself or say, I need a contingency plan, I need something as a backup?
Well, my son was born while I was in graduate school in Albany. So I always had to had to have health insurance. You know, mm-hmm. you got a kid, you got to think about feeding them. And I learned some office skills. I learned my Microsoft suite, and I worked at a hedge fund. I actually, for a little while, did decorative finishing with a company in New York City. And I did stenciling synagogues and things like that, and murals. Neat. And that was pretty fun, but it was just ahead of the dot-com bubble bursting, and so the jobs dried up pretty quickly, and mm-hmm. That's when I ended up working at the hedge fund. That was pretty good. That was pretty sweet, actually. That really saved our bacon.
Wow.
But I decided I needed to kind of move on, and it was at that point that I was, really looking at getting back into the arts as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had been inspired by my son's teachers, and I don't think I ever really doubted myself. But, you know, there are moments when you have to do what you have to do.
Certainly.
Yeah.
For sure. So if someone wants to find your work and get a visual on what we've been talking about these last few minutes, where should they go?
I have a website, CindyBlairLightArt.com, LIGHT. So CindyBlairLightArt.com. And you can find me at CindyBlairLightArt on Instagram, which is maybe the best place to see my work because I'm constantly sharing process photos and everything goes on Instagram. The website gets updated when I feel like I want to put something up there for sale kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. but definitely probably the best place is Instagram.
So, and then they can also come here during January and February of this year to visit your artwork in person during the Marjorie Morrison Sculpture Biennial. Do you have a favorite quote or a book or anything that you want to leave us with before we go?
Let's see. It's a Nelson Mandela quote. It's everything's impossible until it's done.
Nice.
Or everything seems impossible until it's done.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Well, it's been quite a pleasure hearing your story and talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming out here all this way to visit with us and to be on our podcast. I'm Melissa Griffin. You've been listening to the Hammond Regional Arts Center podcast with guest Cindy Blair. Find out more about the artist and her work at CindyBlairLightArt.com. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're inspired by this talk. Have a creative day.